It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. We're going to get you guys ready for the Colts and the Texans here. We'll take a deep dive on some of the big storylines, keys to the game. I'll get my prediction. Seth will give his before the end of the show. Seth, for the third straight week in giving predictions on Texans games, you've not been exact final score, but you have been very accurate the last 3 weeks on kind of the script and the flow of the game.
Yeah, I've been pretty good with the point totals and just exactly how everything would play out.
I thought, and many thought, that the Bills game in week 5 and the Packers game this past weekend were going to be very high scoring games. We're going to be track meets. You were the opposite. You thought they would be tighter games than they were.
Yeah,
you were pretty close in the final scores.
A lot of that hinged on a lack of faith in Jordan Love as a guy that cannot throw interceptions. So, I mean, it wasn't like some twist of fate that he threw those interceptions.
No.
That was, like, they were dumb interceptions.
Yes.
There were things that he could have thrown 3 interceptions on the final drive there. Like, he's that kind of quarterback. Richardson's a tougher one to figure out because he's by so many respects and measures, he's a bad quarterback. And yet, because of that freakish, like, either pass or run that he can make in a game, he becomes a complete and total wild card.
Yeah,
yeah. And so it's a little bit tougher to figure out. But I'll within the next couple hours, I will nail the prediction.
You will. Yes. No, you've been really good the last few weeks. So let's start there. We do the old six-pack preview here, and we start with number one. And that's a good place to start, Anthony Richardson, because you're right. He makes a lot of plays where you're like, boy, this guy's just not very good. He can't throw a football. He looks very raw. And then, as he will do, either with his legs or as he did in the first game against the Texans, he'll launch a missile downfield and hit a big 60 or 50-yard play or whatever, and it cancels out 7 bad plays. It's like a smart bomb on that old game Defender. There's an old video game called Defender where there's a million enemies around you, and you're like, oh, my God, I backed myself into a corner. I suck at this game. But they have a smart bomb button that you can hit, and you hit it, and all of a sudden everybody disappears.
I think with Anthony Richardson, you have A, when you played him the first time around, and then B, what you did against Josh Allen, because Josh Allen is similarly lethal with his legs. I think the Texans have done a good job in limiting the explosive runs by the QB. You almost have to look at the QB runs as part of the passing game where, okay, look, if you give up a 10 or a 15-yard pass, it's no big deal. Just don't give up the deep ball.
Yeah.
Likewise with the QB runs, just, okay, you give up a 10 or a 15-yard QB run.
It's gonna happen.
You can live with that. Yeah. At some point, Anthony Richardson's going to let you down with his arm. So and I trust that the Texans are going to continue to play that way. I think they've let up a lot of yardage to QB runs. Like on a QB run per run average, they're not that good.
Right.
But they haven't had backbreaking QB runs.
Yeah. I think it's for me in this particular one, don't let the Colts do what they did to you in week one with the gigantic pass play.
Yeah.
I would love to know what the percentage chances are of winning a football game when you give up 3 pass plays of 50 yards or more. My guess is it's very low, and yet they won the game in week one. You know what I mean?
And another one, and another play where it was a walk-in touchdown.
Yeah.
And Anthony Richardson just airmailed
missed it.
And
I would put the block punt in there, too. Like, you can't allow these plays that allow a lesser team that eat up big chunks of yardage or allow for short fields like that. You know,
it seems like there have been more big pendulum swinging special teams plays both for and against the Texans on special teams this year than
unusual.
I can remember.
Yeah, there's been at least 3 that I can think of in 7 weeks.
Last week, part of the reason the Texans are in the game was because of the muffed punt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Number 2, bring pressure. Keep bringing pressure. The pressure is starting to result in sacks now, finally. Texans are 4th in sacks. That is a stat that there is no subjectivity, like QB pressure rate. You know what I mean? Like sacks are sacks. They're 4th in sacks. They are, depending on what outlet you go to, they are a top pressuring team. I'll just say that.
Yeah,
they're among the
top
teams.
Some will say they're the best, the highest pressure rate. Others say they have they're the 11th highest pressure rate.
They do a pretty good
job of making the quarterback uncomfortable.
They're good at it.
And I think that Will Anderson these last couple weeks has kind of like, turned a corner in literally turning the corner as a pass rusher. He's starting to show a little bit more of that speed on the edge and not necessarily being a guy that just turns everything into a bull rush. And that was an issue. You know, you watch last week's game and the pass rush, the ends specifically, the Texans' defensive ends, were a real issue for the Packers.
Yeah.
And some of the reason Jordan Love made those decisions was there was a clock in his head that I got to get rid of the ball. So that's what it should look like. Whether they get sacks or not out of it, they were really affecting the quarterback.
Yeah. Texans.
That 41% pressure rate that NFL.com puts out, it's just, it's bogus. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, yeah. Okay, if you're pressuring the quarterback 41% of the time, in my mind, a pressure means either an incomplete pass or an interception. Then there's going to be other incomplete passes in a game where, so anyway, yeah, it's just, it's a little fugazi.
But statistically it is, but the eye test says this is a good team at pressuring the quarterback now.
Yes.
Texans pass defense, really good. 84.8 passer rating is in the upper half. 56.3% completion rating is first in the league. Now, it does help that you've played Anthony Richardson, that you held Josh Allen to 9 for 30. You've played Trevor Lawrence. That probably helped. You played a rookie in Drake May and a rookie in Caleb Williams. The competition level has played in some into that completion percent, but 56.3%, any way you slice it, is really, really good, regardless of competition.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, and that, no, and honestly, like, in line with what I was just saying, like, that does, a 56% completion percentage is a bad, they've turned the average quarterback playing them into the best version of Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
That's it. 56% completion percentage.
Oh, my God. These are good times.
Maybe that actually, okay, that pressure rate might make sense.
Okay. Number three, tackle. You got tackle. Early in the season, this team was tackling very, very well, including week one against the Colts. There was a reason why they held Jonathan Taylor, several reasons, but one of them was they tackled real well, held Jonathan Taylor to 48 yards on 16 carries. They were tackling really well at the beginning of the season. They're not tackling poorly now, but there have been some glaring issues with tackling at times during the last few games. You know, it's not been as good the last few games as it was early in the year. This is a team that will hurt you if you tackle poorly. Jonathan Taylor, if you miss tackles on him, he can take it to the house. Anthony Richardson is a load. They've got to tackle well in this game.
Yeah, and they, you know, I'd even go back to Jalen Petrie, who I was really excited about during camp because he obviously had improved his tackling. You could see the technique was better. And then you go back to a couple weeks ago, and he missed pushing that ball carrier out of bounds. Like, just as simple, I'm not picking on Jalen Petrie. It's just that I felt like that was a good canary in the coal mine of, all right, you get to this point in the season, you're not wearing pads in practice a lot, you've got to actively coach tackling during practice and emphasize it more so than just, you know, tagging guys off and everything. And I felt like they must have slacked a little bit with that in practice, so the getting it back on track to be a really secure tackling team and like they were in the first couple games, this is a good week to do that.
Yep, no doubt. Number four, run the ball the same way you did in week one. This was a bad run defense in week one. We didn't know how bad until week two when the Packers tore them up for about 250 yards. It's still a bad run defense. Now, they get DeForest Buckner back, and that will help, but I will remind people, DeForest Buckner was out there in week one on the defense that allowed 159 yards on the ground to Joe Mixon. This defense gave up 188 yards on 40 rush attempts to a Miami offense last week that had Snoop Huntley at quarterback. This is not a good, Buckner or no Buckner, this is not a good run defense. Here was D'Amico Ryans earlier this week on what worked for Joe Mixon in week one.
Yeah, Joe's been phenomenal for us, right? The way he plays the game, his play style, his demeanor, how he runs with the physical mindset, like it's everything to our run game. When we've ran the ball well, it's no secret that Joe has been in there, and Joe has been part of the reason why we ran it so well. Also, with the blocking up front by the O-line, the tight ends, receivers, everybody involved, the run game goes as all 11 go, right? And Joe has been a big part of our success in the run game.
I think this is what I'm excited about for this week, because we, after week one, I was looking at the offensive line and thinking, man, all right, they've got to clean some stuff up, but this is a different version of the Texans' offensive line in the run game. I'm excited about this. And then it has not been as consistently impressive as it was in week one. Joe Mixon makes a big difference, obviously. But the thing that Texans have struggled against in both the pass and the run game is just movement by the defensive line, pre-snap and post-snap, just slanting, blitzes, all of those things. A good offensive line actually takes movement and slanting defensive linemen and turns it into a strength, because it creates gashes. You know, it creates lanes when the defensive line is slanting. I think that my hope is that the Colts are watching film and they're seeing all those things that give the Texans issues, but that the Texans, if they dial it up right, can turn that into big play opportunities. And I think that's probably what happens. And it just partly because the Colts are not fundamentally a good and sound defense. And I think Joe Mixon goes off again.
I hope so. He's rushed for over 100 yards in every game that he has started and finished this year. He's been out there, he's been excellent. He's been their most valuable offensive player this year so far.
I think you just need more of it to come more steadily. I'd rather have, if a running back's going to get 100 yards in a game, you really, gosh, I would love for it to be on 12 carries, all of which were, you know, somewhere between 7 to 10 yards. Wow.
Well,
that would be awesome. As opposed to a bunch of runs for 2 yards and
58.
Then one big 80-yarder. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what it was in week one for Mixon. His long,
yeah.
he rushed for 159 yards in that game, and the long carry was 13 yards.
It was just a steady diet.
Just a body blow.
Moving the sticks and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. Number five. Offensive line's got to protect. Like, this is the easiest one on the board. And I really hope that all the rhetoric that we've been hearing all week long about, we've seen them do it before, we know they can do it, we got to teach it better, these are fixable problems. They got to fix them, and they got to fix them soon. Here's Bobby Slowick yesterday on what caused issues in the Green Bay game in the passing game.
I wouldn't say it was all protection. I would say our pass game in general struggled. You know, I didn't do a good job with the game plan in that regard. I don't think we went and executed well in really any regard across the board. I think our quarterback made a few special plays to keep us going in the pass game. But we were not throwing the ball well. I mean, we averaged 2.2 a throw or something like that. I mean, you can't. You know, for us, in our standard, we know that's not good enough, and it's been good for us to have some hard conversations about that, and look forward to getting better this week, and you know, we got a new game that we get to go attack.
Yeah, that's the biggest takeaway is, look, the Packers defense is a good, solid defense. I don't care who you're going up against, the 2.2 yards per throw. That's bad. That's really, really bad.
That doesn't even sound right.
I know. Well, except that they were only three. I mean, their yards per play in that game was abysmal.
Well, I guess if you take the sack yardage out, that's probably about what it is if you take the sack yardage out of it.
Right.
It's about 2.5 yards
a
throw, yeah.
Yeah, because you go yards per play and then run and pass, and then that's you factor in the sack yardage, that's the deal.
Yeah, yeah. So,
I think as much as he said it wasn't all about protection, I think part of what he also talked about was, as the game went along, it started to affect both the play calling and the way CJ was operating, I think. That CJ didn't feel confident hanging in and extending plays, but then also they're forced into more of a short passing game, which is easier to anticipate. So it's a lot harder to execute, especially when you don't have Nico Collins threatening deep, that it became really hard to operate because you couldn't trust the protection.
Yeah.
And also you weren't running the ball well. It was a hodgepodge of misery there.
It is funny, like, to watch the narratives about quarterback play with young quarterbacks. When CJ was, you know, when he was cooking last year, and the offseason rolls around, people are like, well, they're going to get film on him, you know, and they're going to figure some things out. And then when a game like Green Bay happens, there's never anything like, okay, CJ's going to figure it out. Like, it almost feels like there's never any allowing for a counterpunch by a young quarterback. It's like, well, this young quarterback's cooking, the league's going to figure him out. And then when he has a bad game, it's like, there it is. He's done. They figured him out. Have the Green Bay Packers given the blueprint to shut down CJ Stroud and the Texans forever?
And then meanwhile, yeah, Josh Allen goes out and completes 30% of his passes, and there was no, yeah, no, but it's, I mean, it makes sense though. You've got a body of work to to back it up on, and I think the equivalent move, the corresponding move, the Texans have to make when the Bills go out and say, "Oh, yeah, okay, we got to go get Amari Cooper."
Right.
The corresponding move for the Texans is, "Okay, we've got to go out and get a healthy Nico Collins."
Yes.
He's got to come back with his hamstring 100% recovered.
With a vengeance, yeah. That bums me out today, man. I didn't put it in this segment anything about Nico just cuz this is more about who is playing in the game and who as opposed to who's not playing in the game. But that is a storyline in this one for probably for both sides. I was going to say for Texan fans, but probably for Colt fans too. I, you know, back in the day, if I had to guess, I'd have to go back and look, and there was probably across the course of T.Y. Hilton's career in the NFL, a Texans game that he missed at some point. Yeah. And I would imagine that was a huge storyline for us. It was like, ah, no T.Y. Hilton in that game. I don't remember it, but if it happened, I could see us feeling that way. They've got to be feeling that way in Indy right now. Nico Collins has torn them up the last three times he's played them.
I think what Nico, the way Nico can contribute this week is if he enters NRG Stadium wearing a clown mask, the way T.Y. Hilton
did. As an homage?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
That would all started what Jonathan Joseph had basically said that somebody made a clown statement about T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah.
And then T.Y. Hilton wore that clown mask into the game.
Yeah, or T.Y. Hilton himself might. I know, because T.Y. Hilton said that he owns NRG Stadium.
Yeah, yeah. And then Jonathan Joseph said it was a clown statement.
Yeah.
And then he T.Y. Hilton wore a clown mask into the.
And they won 21-7 in a playoff game.
He put clown shoes on the Texans defense.
He did indeed. Yeah, he did indeed. Last one.
That would be worth it as a celebration, as a receiver, as long as the game was well in hand. Have somebody hand you a set. Have a set of clown shoes hidden underneath a blanket in the end zone. Just go ahead and grab the shoes and present them to the defensive back.
That
you just beat. Here you go. Put these on. I would put these on, like, I would even put on a referee's shirt, like I'm working at Foot Locker or something.
Yes, and then duke the PA or the DJ up there, like $50 to play, like clown, like circus music. That would be good. You would get fined heavily and penalized for that, but it would be really, really
worth
funny.
It.
Worth it, totally worth it.
I'd donate the money to a clown college.
Last, open the can one more time there, Ben. 27-17. Is my prediction on this game. Texans.
Okay.
Texans 27, Colts 17. I'm nervous because I'm not super nervous about this game. That's what has me nervous. You know what I mean? Like
you should be. That's a good spot to be in. That's a sweet spot. Okay. Always a little bit of anxiety, Sean.
Nervous because I'm not super nervous about the game.
The appropriate level of fear.
The appropriate level
of... the Texans have. Confident, but also with an understanding that things can go awry. Yeah.
D'Amico Ryans is... Since losing to Indy in week two of last year at NRG Stadium, D'Amico Ryans is 7-0, coming off of a loss, 5-2 against the spread. This would be a spread covering game for the Houston Texans, 27-17. The spread is 5.
That's going to be my question to D'Amico after the game. How's it feel? How's it feel to be so reliable with the gamblers?
Yeah.
Tell me, D'Amico.
They become much more. They didn't cover the spread the first four games of the year.
Yeah.
They've covered it in each of the last three games.
Honestly, given D'Amico's end of game strategy, where obviously he doesn't care about the spread, I think that over time there's going to be more gamblers. Even as the Texans could win a Super Bowl, they could go 14-3 in a season. I think over time, gamblers will probably be skeptical of D'Amico.
They're not going to like D'Amico.
Not Texans fans specifically, but on the gambling side of things. Yeah, there's going to be a whole lot of, like, why am I sweating this out? The Texans were up by 17, and now I'm sweating this game out
100%.
At the end because they're playing the appropriately conservative strategy.
I can tell you that that is definitely a feeling that happens with these Houston Texans.
Yeah.
For sure. We'll get to the circle of swarm here in a minute. A few texts coming in reacting to some of our keys to the game. Bullock will not give up the plays that Jimmy Ward did in week one against Anthony Richardson.
I'm growing more and more confident with Bullock on the mental side of things. With any rookie, just always worry about, all right, it's the mistakes that are going to do you in more than the physical stuff. Yeah, I think Bullock's progression, both mentally and physically, has been really impressive. I'm still amazed every time I watch the highlight of that touchdown. I'm really amazed from last week to the tight end.
The one that went through Bullock's hands?
Yeah. I'm just amazed that he didn't actually make an interception on that
play. Or get a finger on it. It was a lot like the interception, or a lot like the Colts game in Week 18 a few years ago, the C.J. Stroud game where it, you know, the Week 18 where it went through the guy's hands.
I've said with him, I think, honestly, by the end of the season, I think that's a pick with a 35-yard return. Because
he picks it and gets up and goes.
Yeah, because he had it figured out. It's just that 1/100th of a second.
Yeah.
Just that that little bit of extra experience where maybe he gets that much better a jump on the ball and he makes that into an interception. He's right there on the brink of it. Yeah. I think like with Jimmy Ward, a couple of those plays, I don't think it was a matter of him recognizing the play slow. He just couldn't run with Alec Pierce.
Yeah.
You know, he just couldn't get back there. And I think with Kalen Bullock, he's capable of getting back there.
Well, he's capable of getting back there. The one I think of from that game with Pierce, where Bullock, to me, for sure would have made the play that Jimmy Ward couldn't make, was the 50, not the touchdown, but the 57-yard one that was it turned into kind of a jump ball.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Ward is 8 inches below Alec Pierce high-pointing the thing. I think if Kalen Bullock's back there, I think there's a chance that's an interception. I think he's got just as good a chance of going up and getting that ball as Alec Pierce would have.
I think you put Jimmy Ward and Bullock on a Vertimax right now. That's the combine thing that they use, Sean,
with the tabs up there that slap.
Little flappers.
The flappers, yeah.
I think Kalen Bullock's definitely a few inches taller than Jimmy Ward on that.
I would agree with that for sure.